About 10 years ago, I interviewed the then ambassador from Saudi Arabia to the United States. And I'm sure he walked in thinking it was going to be a nice, easy interview. But I pressed him on a whole bunch of human rights questions that he said were being resolved, and that Saudi Arabia was changing, and that there were going to be open elections, and that the country was certainly going to not be as oppressive as it had in the past. That's my word. He never used the word oppressive, of course, but I'm paraphrasing him. Well, here we are a decade later, and we're on the cusp of two women in Saudi Arabia who are about to be tried in terror court, a court that was set up to deal essentially with terrorists. What did these two women do? I know you're going to think this is completely outrageous for somebody to even try to do. They got behind the wheel of the car and drove cars. Those are crimes in Saudi Arabia. So with this trial right around the corner, I thought we'd bring in somebody who knows a little bit more about the Middle East than I do. His name's Adam Kugel. He is a Middle East researcher with Human Rights Watch. Adam, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Hi, Paul. It's great to be with you.
Is it officially illegal for women to drive there?
There are various sort of modes of thought about this. While there is no formal law that's been passed by Saudi Arabia's cabinet that bans women from getting behind the wheel and driving, there is a Minister of Interior regulation that prevents it. So formally, you could make the argument sort of either way. There's no formal law that says it's illegal, yet if you do it, you are in violation of sort of a government, a lesser government regulation, if you will.
These two women, Lujain Al-Haflul and Maysa Al-Amoudi, they can't be the only two women who have tried to get behind the wheel of a car in Saudi Arabia.
No, in fact, there's been a broad women's driving movement that was established in 2011. The movement has been encouraging women to get behind the wheel to show Saudi society that, first of all, women are ready, they can drive, that it's not going to be the end of the world, it's not going to change the society to allow women to practice their basic right to drive. And they've had women driving all over the country and posting videos of themselves driving on YouTube just to show how normal and natural it is. Saudi authorities have typically responded to this by quietly pulling over women drivers and then sort of releasing them after they sign a pledge not to do it again. But unfortunately, in this instance, it seems to have responded much more harshly. And I think it's a really, really bad sign of things to come for other women who continue to try to drive.
Why are they being tried in terrorism court?
Well, it seems as though, we'll know more once we see the formal indictment, which will come out in the next few months. But it seems as though they are connecting the case more to the women's social media activity than to the actual driving attempt, right? So Saudi Arabia's terrorism court, which is actually known as a specialized criminal court, was set up in 2008 in order to try dozens and dozens of terrorism suspects who had been in detention for a long time. Over the years, it has sort of expanded its profile to include any sort of criticism of government authorities, any sort of independent activism, human rights activism, or political activism, and it sort of equates all of these types of dissident activity with terrorism. So, very much within the sort of sphere of the way Saudi authorities look at the world, unfortunately, it views any sort of criticism or public criticism of the government as akin to terrorism. So for those who watch Saudi Arabia, who see what goes on, and who see the cases that have sort of been in Saudi courts in which human rights activists have received massive sentences, 10 to 15 years, for essentially speech-related crimes, which aren't actually crimes at all if you actually look at the content of the charges. It's not that surprising to see the fact that these women have been referred to the terrorism court, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's why when I talked about the ambassador lying to me a decade ago about how Saudi Arabia has changed, you can see it isn't. It is still one of the most oppressive regimes on the planet. By the way, more beheadings done by the Saudi government than by ISIS in the last couple of years, and all other terrorist groups combined. That's what it's like over there. So what kind of sentence are these two women facing when they're undoubtedly found guilty of driving?
it's going to be really difficult even to predict at this point because we're sort of breaking new ground. As I said previously, on previous attempts in which women tried to get behind the wheel and do this kind of activism, they were usually just very quietly pulled over. They would hold them in detention for maybe an hour or two, and then they would release them, right? And some of the women were forced to pay a fine. One woman actually did go to court and was sentenced to 10 lashes, so that's corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm.
But the king pardoned her, and the sentence was never carried out. That was back in 2011. So this is the first time we've really seen what will be a major case against two women for this kind of activity. And so, you know, it's really difficult to say, but I mean, I guess what I can say is that when we've seen, at least this year, trials of prominent human rights activists in the terrorism court, people such as Walid Abukhair, and another gentleman named Fadl Massif in the Eastern Province, both men received 15-year jail sentences for essentially, in one case, public interviews he gave with media, you know, talking about Saudi Arabia's human rights record, and the other one for helping journalists try to cover protests, popular protests going on in the Eastern Province.
So it's possible that the government of Saudi Arabia may look at Loujain and Mesa and say, well, let's make an example of them. After all, Loujain has 230,000 followers on Twitter, and Mesa has 132,000 followers on Twitter. And so if we make an example of them, this will send a message throughout the country, don't mess with our oppressive regime.
Yeah, Paul, I think we can already say that in their case. I mean, I think we can already say that they've really sort of, escalated their response to the drive activism and are certainly trying to make an example out of these two women and scare the other women driving activists from continuing these kinds of activities, unfortunately.
Is there any crack at all, Adam, in the Saudi wall of oppression?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Is there any crack in this wall of oppression there?
Well, that's an interesting question. When it comes to public displays of any sort of criticism of Saudi officials or any sort of independent activism, no. I mean, that's something that's not tolerated, and that's something that the Saudi authorities are cracking down on more than ever. However, we do see, just in the area of women's rights, a few sort of small baby steps forward, in fact. So the crackdown on women drivers actually sort of goes against the movement we have seen over the last, I guess you could say, 2 years at least, in which women have more or less been, in many ways, welcomed into the workforce. They've been encouraged to go to work and to gain employment, and there have been some other minor sort of women's rights reforms as well. However, I think it's really important to stress that in spite of any recent reforms, Saudi Arabia, what's known as the male guardianship system, remains in place. And this is a system by which legally a male relative, a male controls essentially all the sort of basic life functions of his female relatives. She has to get his approval, for example, to travel. She has to get his approval to get a passport. She has to get his approval to go to university and access higher education. And many employers require his approval for the woman to work. Some hospitals require his approval to allow women to perform certain medical operations. So you can see, I mean, it's a very oppressive system. It's a system the Saudi authorities have pledged over the last 10 years repeatedly to do away with. However, they haven't gone through with it. They haven't eliminated all the aspects of it. And one of the major aspects of it, in fact, is the ban on women driving. So Saudi authorities, if they're going to make good on their word, they need to first of all end this malicious prosecution against these two women, and they need to actually completely disband the male guardianship system in its entirety.
Adam, I recall several years ago an American lieutenant colonel by the name of Martha McSally, who was one of the highest ranking women in the United States Air Force. She was based there in Saudi Arabia, and there were questions about whether she, a woman who flew a fighter pilot over that country, would be allowed to drive a car on the holy soil of Saudi Arabia. And I know that we've had female secretaries of state, starting with Madeleine Albright and right up through Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton, and they have made trips to Saudi Arabia. Are they given any kind of a pass by the religious zealots of that country?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say they're given a pass. I know there have been instances in which human rights organizations have called on countries of visiting delegations to Saudi Arabia to have women driving the sort of official motorcade around the country. But I don't know if that's ever actually happened. You know, it's really interesting that you bring up that point, though, because the first women's driving movement in Saudi Arabia actually began in 1991, back when U.S. military personnel were stationing themselves inside the kingdom, and Saudi women saw actually American women driving inside U.S. military bases.
Uh-huh.
So they used that as an inspiration to create, in fact, they called it a driving convoy in Riyadh, where I think a group of about 60 or 70 women got behind the wheel and drove together down the street. They were absolutely, of course, stopped from being able to carry this out, and they were arrested. Many of them were actually prosecuted, lost their jobs, lost benefits, and
wow. You know,
they had many, many problems for years to come. But it's just sort of interesting that you bring up the connect between women's driving movements and the question of whether foreign, especially foreign women in diplomatic circles, you know, what's the relationship between that and Saudi women themselves being able to drive?
Adam, I've only got a minute left here, but I'm curious, if you took an American who had never driven a car and put him or her behind the wheel, probably not going to go all that well. These women must have been trained by men. They must have been taking driving lessons in secret somewhere, right?
No, that's absolutely right, and I probably should have mentioned that beforehand. So the Saudi women are clear that they do not allow women who don't know how to drive to get behind the wheel. Every woman who does this kind of activism in Saudi Arabia has a driver's license in another country. So either in the U.S., somewhere in Europe, or in most cases, in fact, somewhere else in the Gulf countries. So all of them have a valid license of some sort, and that's actually a requirement by the women driving activists for all women who do this kind of activism.
Hard to believe this is still going on in the 21st century. Adam Kugel is a Middle East researcher with Human Rights Watch. Thanks so much for joining me here today, and have a happy new year.
Yeah, same to you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.